This month, the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources announced that a deer killed near Shell Lake had tested positive for chronic wasting disease. CWD, as it is otherwise known, is a fatal brain disease in deer that has long been known to exist in southern Wisconsin. But now that it's been found in the north, there are big questions, like, how did CWD make that jump? Does this mean it's more widespread in the state than once thought? And, of course, the biggest question of all, is it a threat to hunters and families that eat the venison? We'll ask those questions and more this hour. I'm Rich Kramer, and you're listening to The West Side. I'm joined in studio by the Outdoor Guys. They are outdoor editor for the Eau Claire Leader-Telegram, Joe Knight. Joe, thanks for stopping by.
Thanks for inviting me.
And we've also got in the studio host of the syndicated TV show Northland Adventures, Dave Carlson. Dave, thanks for stopping by.
Glad to be here.
And joining us by phone is Kurt Thiede. He is the administrator of the land division for the DNR. Kurt Thiede, thanks so much for taking the time.
Yeah, thanks, Rich, for the offer.
And later this hour, we will get a call from Dr. James Kroll. He is the nationally recognized white-tailed deer expert that was appointed by Governor Walker to study the way the DNR manages the deer herd in Wisconsin. And we hope to get some calls from you, the listener. Do you think chronic wasting disease is overhyped by the media? Are you a hunter that's thinking about moving somewhere else because of the CWD discovery? We need to know. Give us a call and let us know. The number is 800-228-5615. That number again is 800-228-5615. Now, Kurt Thiede, real quick, if you could give us a little bit of history regarding the CWD discovery near Shell Lake. It made a big splash in the news earlier this month. I believe it was April 4th or so. Where and when did the DNR find this infected deer?
Yeah, the backstory on this is just to kind of trace backwards, we did receive the confirming or second positive test result as verified by the National Veterinary Diagnostic Lab out of Ames, Iowa, on Friday, and then we'd made the announcement on April 4th, that Monday, the following Monday, to the public to let them know what we had found. Where this all started was back in November, November the 19th, it was close to opening weekend, up in Washburn County. We received a phone call of a deer that was acting strange. It was lying down. It was approachable, and there was also reports of hair that was sloughing off of the animal. A sheriff's deputy was dispatched to the scene. One of our conservation wardens was there as well. The deputy dispatched the animal, and our warden took possession of that deer. It was the head was taken, and the data was collected. And then that information was delivered along with the head down to Madison. There was a delay before the head was sampled, but the samples that were done, that were taken and then tested at the Wisconsin Veterinary Diagnostic Labs, a couple of confirming tests there, they all came back positive. We wanted to be very sure so we wanted a second test. And so that test was submitted, and it was conducted at the Ames, Iowa National Lab. And then that's kind of takes us to where we are now of having a confirmed positive up in Washburn County. The location was approximately about 3.5 miles west of Shell Lake.
All right. And now I guess the $64,000 question would be, how did the CWD jump from southern Wisconsin to Shell Lake? Or are we even saying that it did jump? Or any idea how it got here?
We don't have the answers for that yet. We need to, I think, get a better handle just on what we have up in the Shell Lake area. We are going to, we immediately began contacting some of our car deer contractors who pick up deer along the road to begin collecting samples. We know they have been able to collect a few heads, and we'll now be sampling those in the week following the announcement. So that was really the first step, and I think until we get a better handle on just what we have there in the Shell Lake area, and do a few more interviews in the local area, and do a few more tracebacks, it's going to be difficult for us to say exactly just how it ended up there. And then, as we found out too, in 2002 in Mount Horeb, you know, just how it all first started in that area. We still don't really have firm answers there either, unfortunately.
All right. So it's a brain disease. What causes it? Are there any? I mean, there's a lot of unknowns with this disease, aren't there?
Well, there are less unknowns than we had back in 2002, and I think that's definitely why we've some of the questions have come. Why we've been approaching this one slightly different than we did in the Mount Horeb area. There's been a lot of research done, conducted. We do know more about the disease, such as how it's transmitted, more about how the disease acts than we did before. Basically, what causes it is it's a misshapen protein or a mutated protein that basically starts creating these spongy or dead spots in the brain, and as a result, renders the deer to eventually. The deer will die, but some of the symptoms that were shown in regards to the sick nature and the ability to approach the deer are some of the telling signs of a CWD-positive animal.
Mr. Thede, Dave Carlson, Northland Adventures. Curious, have you contacted Colorado or Wyoming to ask them what they know about how CWD has moved around the state, both of those states, and it's made many leaps over the past years?
Yeah, we've obviously our the community, our the wildlife health community is a close community. Our wildlife health team, in addition to being busy up in the Washburn area and also down here in Madison, keeps very close contact with both state officials and national officials. We've been learning a lot from Colorado. We've learned a lot from other states, and I think other states are also learning a lot from Wisconsin.
What does this mean for the fall deer hunts, gun and bow included?
Yeah, it's a good question, and that was one of the immediate questions that that we started to receive. We're not planning any modifications to the deer season up in that part of the state. It'll be a normal season. But what we are going to be doing is requesting hunters to submit samples. We would like to make sure that at least within that 10-mile area surrounding the positive that we're able to collect. The current target is around 500 deer heads for sampling.
Won't there be a change in bans on baiting?
Yeah, I guess I should have qualified that. The season framework as itself, the number of days, the 9-day deer gun hunting season, muzzleloader season, archery, that won't change.
Right.
But the regulations as it pertains to baiting and feeding, there is a state statute on the books that directs the department to enact a baiting and feeding prohibition in any county or in any county that's located within 10 miles of a positive. As a result of where this positive is located, that would be touching Washburn, Burnett, Polk, Burnett and Barron counties.
Yes. The animal that was tested positive was 3.5-year-old doe. It's my understanding, Kurt, that the CWD takes about a year and a half to show itself, that it's not present in fawns, or at least doesn't exhibit itself, the symptoms. So that takes us back to 2 years. Are you looking at it in a chronological kind of a CSI type of thing, what was happening 2 years ago in that area?
Yeah, it's and that's part of the I guess what I referred to as the trace back is, you know, what can we learn more about this animal? Were there other animals observed acting similarly, or was this animal observed prior to this year hanging around the same area showing symptoms? One of the things in regards to when the symptoms start showing up, it's a fairly fairly progressive disease. What we do know is that deer that are harvested down in the southern part of the state at 2.5, perhaps even 3 years of age, do not show signs that have come back as positive. It's accurate to say, Dave, that we typically do not test fawns because if it is present in fawns, it's typically very difficult to detect, and they typically do not show high signs of the disease of the prion. In the tests until a year or so of age.
Oh, you want me to talk? I haven't chimed in yet. This is Joe and Peter Telegram. Yeah. They're telling me to jump in the game. Are there any deer farms in the vicinity of where the detect was made, and have they been tested?
There are deer farms in the area. In regards to one of the things that, as far as the separation of responsibilities within state government, the Department of Natural Resources, we're responsible basically for the fences. One thing that we immediately did is check back to verify that our fence inspections were up to speed, and then also contacted our counterparts at the Department of Ag Trade and Consumer Protection. The folks at DACAP obviously are doing their fair share to also check to make sure that what's happening inside the fence is up to date. As far as specific questions in regards to records and things like that, our counterparts at DACAP would probably best be able to answer that.
You're saying there are deer farms in the area. If so, how close are they to the spot where this animal was recovered?
We've got deer farms within 5 to 10 miles. The exact numbers I do not have, but I believe there are deer farms that were at least within 5 miles of where this positive was found.
Hmm. Interesting. Now I want to ask Joe and Dave. I've talked to some folks in the Shell Lake area for different stories that, you know, reaction stories to this whole news about the CWD, and almost all of them said they will not stop hunting their spots, and they're not too concerned about eating the venison. Have you been getting similar reactions, Joe Knight?
I haven't heard any concerned hunters. The reaction seems to be quite a bit different than back in 2002, when there was a lot of hunters. In fact, we've really never recovered from then. We had like a 10% drop, and it looked like it was going to be quite a bit greater than that. And mm-hmm. I even wrote a column saying, "Hey, I'm going to go hunting like I always do, and I'm going to eat the deer, but hold off on the brain, which I never ate before, anyways." And I got emails saying, "Well, boy, you're really putting people at risk by writing that column. You know,
right.
They're going to go out and they're going to get this terrible disease." And I think now we're almost too casual about it. It is a worry, and there are some the health experts are, you know, they say don't eat a deer if you think it has CWD or if it has CWD.
That's what the CDC recommends too, I believe.
But yet there's no studies that directly link that, are there? I haven't heard of any.
I don't think there's been any human detect. Is that right, Kurt? Is that your...
No, yeah, that's right, Joel. We haven't had instances where there have been any proof that CWD has jumped to humans. The human version of the disease, Creutzfeldt-Jakob's disease, there has not been any linkage that's been proven between CWD and showing up in humans.
I detect, I visited the site yesterday up by Shell Lake, and it looks like any other Four Corners out in Wisconsin, quite frankly. Not much traffic, the point is, the people I've talked to up there, friends so forth that live in the area, there's a lot of apathy. People don't seem to be too unsettled about it. And you've got a meeting planned for Monday night, do you not, at Spooner to open up a forum on with information about this whole incident?
Yeah, that's correct. We have a public meeting. It's going to be held at the Spooner High School. It's going to begin at 7 p.m., and this is going to be an opportunity for us to basically share the information, that some of which I've shared with you tonight, and then more importantly, I think, open up a dialogue with the public. We're in this together with the local community, and we think it's important that as we start going forward, that we need to have a united front on our reaction, and you know, whether it be the sampling plans or anything that we plan to accomplish there in the Washburn County and the Shell Lake area, that we need to be there, be right there with the community.
Kurt Thede, the state budgets for agencies are as tight as I can imagine that they've ever been. Can the DNR effectively fund a response to CWD in the Shell Lake area with budgets in the situation they're at in?
Well, it's a very good question, and this is the time of year where we're starting to pull together our budget requests. As far as sampling and surveillance efforts up in that part of the state, we're obviously planning for that to proceed, to make sure that we can provide testing down in the CWD southern area, and then also make sure that we do what we can in regards to being efficient and but also effective in collecting samples to make sure that we get the proper amount of surveillance done up in the Spooner area. One thing that we one of the things that you know we have been able to do I think is more efficiently sample the animals. We're using the test previously was a lot more invasive and took a lot more time. So I think we're trying to build in efficiencies to make sure that we're sampling and collecting samples efficiently as we can.
Should the public find an animal or see an animal, what should they do? What should they be looking for if they suspect that deer is sickly?
The best thing that they can do and the easiest for the public would be to call our toll-free line. It's 1-888-DNR-INFO, I-N-F-O. And that's the best thing they can do. They can they'll be able to talk to someone there's someone that will be able to answer their call from 7 until 10, 7 days a week. Once it's reported, our folks can get them in touch with the local biologist or local warden. We can immediately get someone lined up to come get the information and show up to see what the status of the deer is.
All right. I'd like to remind our listeners that you can call in at 800-228-5615. That number again is 800-228-5615. And we do have a person on the phone. I'd like to welcome Dr. James Kroll to the program this afternoon. Dr. Kroll is a nationally recognized white-tailed deer expert, and he's been appointed by Governor Walker to do a study of the deer management in Wisconsin. And Dr. Kroll, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you. It's nice to follow Kurt. He sounds to me like they're on top of things.
Right. What are your thoughts? There was a meeting last night at the Hayward Middle School that you had hosted. But there wasn't a whole lot of talk, not as much as I thought there would have been, about chronic wasting disease. What are you hearing from hunters on that from northern Wisconsin?
Yeah, I was really surprised, too. Gary Alt and Dave Gwynn and I talked about it afterwards. That was one of the things we thought we'd hear a lot about predation, a lot about CWD. We didn't hear much. Basically, what we're hearing is folks are a little bit more calm than they were back during the day when it hit Mount Horeb. They're in a wait-and-see. I think most of them are very much in support of what the DNR is doing right now in that area. So I was surprised, but it's nice to hear that they have a wait and see attitude.
And Dr. Kroll, Dave Carlson, we've talked a little bit in the past. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing fine.
What kind of crowd are you looking for tonight at Black River Falls?
Well, probably about the same as the last one's probably upwards of 300.
Starts at 7 o'clock at the middle school, right, or high school?
Right, at the middle school.
We get down that way, so folks maybe would want to go out and see it. Mm-hmm. Back to CWD, you were very critical of the DNR in your preliminary mm-hmm. report, calling their CWD eradication a failure. Mm-hmm. And that effort is likely, though, to be needed, or some variety of that, in this area, in this new CWD discovery area, wouldn't you think, or not? Just how should they treat it?
Well, probably. I don't know if it will be or not. Yes, I was critical. And it's easy to criticize in the rearview mirror, but these guys have learned from their mistakes, and that's what I was saying a moment ago, is that the proper approach, the scientifically correct approach, is to first surveil. And they've put a 2-mile circle, as I understand it, around where that deer was found. And they're going to be sampling in there right away and seeing, just how widespread or not widespread it is. Then if they do find the correct procedures, they do find it in the 2-mile circle, they expand the circle till you find the limits. And then you sit down and come up with a plan for dealing with it, which might be, reduced population there or some other management strategy.
Dr. Kroll, Joe Knight with the Eau Claire newspaper. In your interim report, you mentioned something about Illinois. You cited a couple previous studies of Wisconsin audit and a in a survey, and they were also critical of the effects, at least, of the DNR effort.
Right.
What are they doing in Illinois differently? And wasn't the Wisconsin DNR justified in trying to eradicate this thing? Or if that they couldn't do that, at least try to stop the spread of it?
They were justified under the conditions they were in. Their actions were justified. The actions, I don't think, were the right ones. But and at the time, I said it's not possible to eradicate it. As I said a while ago, the actions were not the right ones, but no one can question their motives on that. I guarantee you that. They had the best interests of the white-tailed deer and white-tailed deer hunting in mind. Just because you make a mistake doesn't mean that you have bad motives or anything.
What about the folks out in Colorado and Wyoming who see this spreading through their state? Mm-hmm. What do you see them doing differently than Wisconsin, or are they doing the very same thing, or are they doing nothing?
No, what they've done is they've come up with a new strategy that's more of a management strategy. It's not as they're moving away from eradication. They realize they can't eradicate it. They're more of a monitoring strategy. They're even dealing with deer farmers in a little different way than they have in the past, and quarantining. And I think now that we've got we can safely say that it's been known since the 60s, but it's probably been around a lot longer than that, and it's probably more widespread than we know right now. But they're adjusting their strategy. They're looking very intensely. They're finding a high infection rate, but the whether or not the populations are declining is debatable. Mule deer population has been declining everywhere, especially in the face of competition with elk, and also the onslaught of expansion of the range of whitetails into that part of the world. Habitat changes, a bunch of things have been going on, so we're not really sure whether the population decline or not. We do know this, that recently some more mule deer were found with the disease in southern New Mexico, and which is rather perplexing because there's never been a deer farmer in New Mexico or any captive deer in New Mexico, which supports that, some of us believe that CWD is a lot like cancer. There's multiple causes of it. There's some science out there that says that there's some nutritional links and that sort of thing, but to answer your question, Colorado's backing off a little bit, adopting a new strategy as they go.
What's the likelihood of this being the only CWD-positive deer in northern Wisconsin?
I think there's a very good likelihood that it is. This has happened in isolated places before. We're not sure. It could be the only one. That's why I'd say that they're using the proper procedure, is that we got one. Now let's look for two and see just what it is. Maybe it's if it is a disease that can spring up spontaneously, maybe this is the only one, and maybe it hadn't had time to spread it to anybody else.
Dr. Kroll, you mentioned last night that a quote from your presentation was that we asked for data on the number of deer found dead in the CWD zones that, when autopsied and tested, died of CWD. What are you getting at there? That the DNR just didn't do enough testing of deer that they found laying around in the woods and all withered away?
No, I don't think that's it. They just didn't have any data, and I don't think that I asked for explanation, and some of it was they just didn't find any, talked about that there was difficulty getting on private land. But my opinion is that. If those landowners out there were concerned enough, there were deer, that many deer falling dead, there had been some reports.
Kurt Thiede, I'd like to get you back into the conversation if you're still there.
Yeah, right here.
What about the idea that this might be just an isolated case, this one deer in northern Wisconsin? How likely do you feel that might be?
Well, first, just want to quick say hi to Dr. Kroll. Good to
talk to you. Hey, Kurt, how you doing? Good talk to you, man.
Yeah, and thank you both for being on the program. We got an all-star cast here for sure.
Absolutely.
But Kurt Thiede, what about that? And also, what about the data that the DNR wasn't able to provide on the deer in the CW found dead in the CWD zone?
Yeah, the first part of the question in regards to is this the only deer up there? I think that's what we're going to find out here soon. As Dr. Kroll mentioned, and I think as I had mentioned earlier too, our approach here is we're going to take a look. We need to find out what's there, and that's going to be done through surveillance and through the help of you know, local community hunters, our car deer kill operators as well, collecting those heads for us. So that's going to be one of the questions we'll be able to answer here as we move through this deer season. And I guess I wouldn't place a bet on it at this point of whether it's the only one or not. It's kind of an unknown at this time.
Mm-hmm.
In regards to the second part, in the what we often, and this is just kind of having been a resident of that part of the state as well, most of the calls that we would get are similar to this one that has occurred up in Washburn, where someone would observe a deer acting strangely in their backyard, and we would be dispatched, a warden would be dispatched, or local law enforcement to collect the deer. So those are primarily how the reports would come in. It was more of the deer acting strangely, or as is most often the case with all of the samples that we've taken, were from hunter-harvested deer. So the number of positive deer that showed up as a result of landowners finding them on their properties, it's just not something we got a lot of reports on.
And just quickly, I wanted to. I know you've got to let us. You've got to get going, Kurt Thede, and also Dr. Kroll in a not too long.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to get to that meeting.
Yeah. But Kurt Thede, what are your thoughts on this whole study that Dr. Kroll is charged with producing, or this report?
Well, I think the preliminary findings are out, and that's really the impetus for these meetings that Dr. Kroll is now holding across the state, along with Dr. Ginn and Dr. Ault. I think what we're anxiously anticipating are the final report that I understand is due out in June. Yep. There'll be an opportunity to take a look at their findings, their recommendations, and. I think some of the findings already in the initial findings, as far as better engaging the public, connecting with hunters, I think that's a message that we understand loud and clear, and that's something that hopefully that we were able to exhibit this past spring, getting that message and trying to increase the number of folks that turned out and the amount of feedback that we got back for our deer herd status meeting. So it's we're looking forward to the final report, and I wish Dr. Kroll the best as he's developing those recommendations and the rest of the meetings this week.
All right, gentlemen in the studio, any final comments?
Well, I just have one comment for Dr. Kroll. How do you interpret the way you were received by the crowd last night? I've been to a heck of a lot of meetings where all sorts of issues, and there's booing and hissing and cheering and applauding. There was dead silence, not only
right.
after your presentation, but after Gary Ault's and Dr. Gwynn's. No
yep.
applause, not even a polite greeting applause. What is that?
Yep.
How do you interpret that?
Those are people thinking. That's the way they've all been. Those people are thinking.
Because they are polite folks.
We didn't want applause. We're not there to entertain. We're there to help. And those people are. Let me tell you something. I found out. Well, I already knew this coming into this, but these town hall meetings have confirmed it, is that the people of Wisconsin are more knowledgeable and have a greater depth of knowledge than a lot of folks I work with in a lot of other states.
But you these noticed
people
it.
Have thought about this a long time, and mm-hmm. and so, yeah, I was happy with the response. We had lots of people come up afterwards and thank us for caring, thank us for listening. They're serious. They roll up their sleeves and ready to go to work. Just as I guarantee the DNR guys are ready to roll their sleeves up and go to work too.
Dr. Deer, Joe Knight, All Clear Paper. We had a deer farm in Portage County, in the central part of the state, that had 80% infection rate with chronic wasting disease, the highest in the state and maybe the highest in the country. So you can see why we're worried when. Just at the possibility, first of all, this disease does seem to be fairly contagious, and that that when we hear this, there were other deer farms in Washburn County, might not a person think that given a contagious disease, it's more likely that it came from some other animal than sort of a spontaneous genetic mutation?
No, probably it came from an animal, more than likely. The interesting thing about the disease, and this is what I'll end with, is We know, I don't think any scientist could argue with the fact that, distorted prions are the infective agent. It's just how they become distorted in the first place. Because you understand we all have normal prions in our nervous systems that, you know, they're important to us. So I'm not sure. All I know is when they find it in deer farms, then it needs to be eradicated. Now, there's an area we can't eradicate. By golly, we know how to eradicate them in a deer farm.
All right. Well, with that, gentlemen, thank you both for joining us for as long as you could. We're going to take our break now. This is the West Side. We're talking about chronic wasting disease in western Wisconsin, and we'll talk about all other things outdoors when we come back. This is the West Side. Welcome back to the West Side. I'm Rich Kramer, and you're listening to Wisconsin Public Radio. Chronic wasting disease isn't just for southern Wisconsin deer anymore. This month, a deer with the fatal brain disease was found right under our noses near Shell Lake, Wisconsin. We're talking about this hour. We were joined just before the break by Kurt Thiede. He's the land administrator with the Department of Natural Resources. And we also heard from Dr. James Kroll, who is the deer trustee appointed by Governor Walker. But they were not able to stay with us for the rest of the hour, but that is fine. This gives us a chance to hear from the hunters and non-hunters in western Wisconsin listening to the program. Give us a call at 800-228-5615 and let us know what you think. Are you concerned? Are you afraid of this disease being in our area? Is it going to change your hunting habits? Are you going to go elsewhere? We want to hear. Give us a call, 800-228-5615, and you can also post on our West Side Facebook page. We've got wide open phone lines right now. And you were mentioning the reaction, Dave Carlson, at the meeting last night. That was pretty interesting that they were dead silence. What were you expecting?
Well, I wasn't expecting cheering or jeering or anything, but a polite applause when somebody's introduced. That's the norm
that's
in North Wisconsin.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. You know, okay, hello, let's, and you can still think when you do that.
Yeah.
By the way, it's not like they were locked in deadlocked in some kind of a brain dysfunction or something because they were so intent upon hearing. I think they're skeptical. I think people are skeptical of
that this is just another study or what?
Right. Well, we've had a line of studies since the late 1990s and on through. We've spent over, as Dr. Kroll points out, we've spent a ton of money studying deer and deer management. And a lot of them have produced some of the very same results. In fact, some of Dr. Kroll's preliminary findings, in my judgment, are just a warm-up of the same old hash from previous studies. In fact, the preliminary study is 183 pages, and about only 20 of it are the substantive matters that the media and other people are looking at. The rest of it is kind of what else has been done and their references for what they are doing and so forth. Let's see what the final report brings. The thing that was a big disappointment to me, and I don't know how it's going at the other town hall meetings, is that people came to these meetings, no recommendations, no solutions. We know problems as they're voiced or framed by the public, some of the public, but where are your solutions? These people, some of them stood up, and as you heard it, you were there too, repeated the same old stories.
Right.
More about me, 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 and mine, 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 and where I hunt, where I hunt, where I hunt, and not taking a look at the bigger picture, perhaps, and the complexity of the situation, coming up with something fresh.
Joanne? Yeah,
one thing I took away from the interim report was that it is more of a literature review. You know, whenever you're doing a scientific study, first you go and see what else other scientists have done before that. So the Kroll team went back and looked, starting with Deer 2000, what other social and biological studies have been done on the deer. And it was interesting, I thought, with the SAK study a few years ago, the DNR got a bunch of, they had outside experts come in and look at the model DNR used for the sex age kill model DNR used for estimating deer populations.
Right.
And I thought it was kind of a mixed review, a lot of technical stuff. Okay. And the DNR tended to pull the points that were positive and said, oh, look at, they give us a big pat on the back. And the Kroll and team tended to point to choose the more negative things. And I thought they had some interesting comments on, especially that SAK doesn't necessarily work well at the small, at the level of management units that we have.
Mm-hmm.
One recommendation of the first study is, hey, you know, increase the sizes of your management units, but
yeah,
we don't want to do that partly for social reasons.
And that was a point that Dr. Kroll made last night, that Wisconsin's got over 100 deer management units, but only 72 counties, and he kind of hinted at that that's a little ridiculous. Did you hear that part, Dave?
Yeah, I heard some of that, but I really think Dr. Kroll's one of the three amigos, as I call them. There are three people involved in this study.
Right.
Dr. Kroll, Dr. Gary Ault, and Dr. David Gwynn. And Gary Ault made an impassioned plea for people to come forward with recommendations,
yeah,
before the public had a chance to talk. And I thought, this is the kind of prompting that this audience and the others at the town hall meetings need. Come, let's do some brain thinking. And to me, they weren't. But Gary made an impassioned plea also for people to take this seriously, and not that they aren't, come up with things and support them, because the future of hunting is at stake.
Right.
And if hunters don't do this, the non-hunters and the anti-hunters are going to take even greater pot shots at them, and we're going to continue to see a demise in hunter numbers, and that will only lead to more commercialization and more the shooting by government officials, you know,
mm-hmm,
where they have to go out and knock down the herd numbers when all these complaints roll in. It's time for unification. It's time for some really creative thinking. I don't know if it's too late to get that into this report to start making that type of hard, information available and something that is for them to really chew on, come up, because right now I think they're almost doomed to writing all the creative ideas themselves, that the input from the public just isn't coming. It's more about the individual and the individual's needs, and that's too bad.
But I talked to, grabbed some people on their way out and asked them of their input or what they thought of the whole thing. And I heard from at least two or three people that, well, they said, this is a rough quote, I think they've already got their recommendations in their head, so it doesn't really matter much what our input is. And there also was some concern that because this was an appointment by the governor, that this is just going to be a report that reflects what the governor wants. Get that?
Well, before the meeting, I talked to Kroll outside in a little one-on-one interview, and I asked him about that. Now that when I spoke to him previously, the recall was not looming. The recall is reality now.
Yeah.
And again, the question is, how is that and other political moods in the state, you know, how are they going to affect the final report? The DNR, what kind of pressures? And he insists that he and his two other amigos in this effort are not going to listen to any of it. They're going
to.
Well,
they even mentioned they haven't been bothered by this.
Yes, they haven't been. They're not. It's not a factor. They're remaining clean. He's repeated this often, that this is one of the highlights of his career, to be able to do this study for a state of Wisconsin deer herd management program, and the same for Ault, the same for Gwynn, that they feel honored to be doing this.
Kathy Stepp was in Eau Claire. She stopped in for an editorial board meeting a few months ago, and she said, hey, whatever, our agency is going to be open to whatever they recommend. So.
And Joe, on a previous West Side Outside, you were when we first heard about the Deer Trustee situation, you were a little, I don't know, you weren't, I guess you seemed a little concerned about it, I think it was Joe. Nonetheless, first of all, have you come around to the idea of the study, and do you think that this is just, some kind of a political or a study that's going to be pushed by politics?
I'm still a little concerned about James Kroll's background with the deer farming and deer feeding, and I think he has a good team. He's put together a good team, which gave me more confidence in him. I think the report that he came out. The interim report kind of stirred the pot, and I was interested in what he did with his comments, his team's comments on SAK. I'm a little bit worried about his kind of casual approach to chronic wasting disease. He kind of seems to think it's always been out there, and and I think it's a little more serious problem than that. I think it's something that you don't get a do-over on chronic wasting disease like you do. If you underestimate or overestimate deer numbers, you can back off on the antlerless permits, and you can cure that. But once you've got CWD in a region, it's there for good. So I think you need to...
Hey, guys, I've got an idea here. It's raining outside. That makes me think of water. And water makes me think of fishing. And fish team, we've got some minutes to fill here. And, I think we should.
We'll talk about fishing. Let us take our final break here, Dave Carlson, and we'll be right back. I know Joe had an article about the trout fishing opener up on the Brule. We could talk about that. And Joe, Dave is obviously champing at the bid here. So stay tuned. You're listening to the West Side. We've got the outdoor guys, Joe Knight and Dave Carlson. We'll be right back. I'm Rich Kramer, and you're listening to The West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for joining us. We are talking this hour about all things outdoors now. If you missed part of the program where we had Kurt Thiede, who is a land administrator for the DNR, and we also had Dr. James Kroll. If you missed that, you can check it out on our online archives. Go to WPR.org. Click on the West Side, and then click on the Listen Here link. The show will be uploaded shortly after the program. So, all right, Dave, you want to talk about fishing. We got some minutes to fill. What's on your mind?
Well, it's great to have it coming back.
It is.
You know, we have year-round fishing, and in fact, at the Conservation Congress, they talked about liberalizing the seasons and going statewide on a lot of species. But there's something special for right now in 2012 about another opener, just as there always has been. Trout season will reopen after a little week closure during the early season, which is catch and release only. And then we go into, you know, most of our game fish are open, bass, even in the southern zone, muskies, northern pike, and so forth. Walleyes, of course, the bread and butter fish, and it'll be cool. Yeah, it's really a topsy-turvy world out there this year.
How do you mean?
Well, the fish spawning activity has been up and down, the water temperatures and wind action, all of that has played. I understand the Chippewas are doing quite well on spear fishing this year, over 30,000 harvested, according to my information, walleyes, that is, and, of course, a smattering of muskies, too. But I don't know. The panfish, I don't think they know which way to go, because sometimes you hear reports from people that they're getting them shallow even now. No signs of spawning, but they're in close, and sometimes they're back out in 8-10 feet of water. So they must be following water temperatures. Personally, I think it's going to be a good opener. Governor Walker is going to be opening up on the Trago Flowage. That's where the Wisconsin governor's fishing opener is going to be this year, hosted by the city of Spooner and Trago and area businesses. They're going to have a breakfast on an old train there parked in Spooner. It's a train bed and breakfast operation, but they're going to be serving breakfast there from that first morning. And then the Wooden Canoe Heritage Museum is a site of some activity, and they've got banquets, and then they'll all crowd into the Trago Flowage to fish. It's not a bad fishery. It's got walleyes, muskies, and so forth. I think the people of the north are excited. They're ready for another season, waiting to see how tourism is going to flow, I think it's going to be good, and it's going to be exciting. I'm anxious to get out on some of the rivers and play around with those smallmouth bass myself. What about you, Joe?
Well, I've been enjoying the early trout season with this mild weather, at least in March.
Right.
We had some good fishing already. I'm going to be in Philadelphia at a wedding for the opener, so I'll miss all the brouhaha. But I think the fish are going to still be ahead of schedule despite our return to more seasonable weather right now. Boy, they were spawning on Lake Altoona, that our local fish manager said the day after ice went out at a record early date. And he had his nets out the day after that, and he had spawning perch in them already. So he was saying that's the earliest he's ever seen perch spawning. So often the opener is a little bit of a disappointment. From a social aspect, it's always good, but often the walleyes just got done with spawning, and it's never quite as good as you'd hoped it would be. And the people always say, "Well, come back in 2 weeks when the water's warmed up a little bit." And of course, but then everyone's gone back to their day to day thing. So maybe this will be the equivalent of coming back in 2 weeks, and they'll hit the walleyes when they're a little more active.
And I read a piece that you wrote about the trout fishing up on the Brule, and that's always a great time. I've got a lot of friends who are just absolutely bonkers about it. One friend actually would ride a bike from Superior, a bicycle, out to the Brule.
He's a true steelhead.
Yeah, he's crazy.
Yeah, it's a cult. It's like the musky fishing version of trout fishing, because you go and you wade in the stream for these big fish that come in from Lake Superior, and they get to 26, 30 inches, and I'm not very good. I don't really have the patience to be a good steelheader, but I had a good outing that time.
There were some mixed reports of the success out there. You did pretty well.
I caught a couple bright fish that had come in, yeah, but most of the fish, because the river warmed up so early, they thought that a lot of the fish came in early and ran up south of Highway 2. Mm. And spawned already, and they were coming down, and they were mostly catching what they call dark fish that's been in the river for a while and has spawned. And but I've since heard good reports too that with a little more high water, that more bright fish are coming into the river. So.
Okay. Yeah, things happen in patterns in nature, or in waves, I should say. Nothing happens all at once. So I think they're getting a little bit of rain too, and that's a good thing. That'll attract more fish, and I'm sure it's not going to hurt waters around here either. This is welcome because some of our lakes are still in droughty conditions, mm-hmm. and very low. So,
well, especially northwest up Wascott Way and Minung. And, yeah.
Right. And I would urge people, too, who go out and maybe do some camping or hit the back lakes, those little spit lakes out in the woods up in that Douglas and Burnett County area, to be extremely careful with fire and certainly mm-hmm. smoking materials if you smoke, because it's very dry and there's a lot of tinder laying around there from the big blowdowns a year ago.
Yeah, the DNR, I believe they've got double the equipment on hand. I think they've got 4 tanker planes in Spooner and Siren, and so they're on pins and needles with that one. Definitely be careful. This is on fishing. I was speaking with Buzz Sorge. We were talking about Half Moon Lake. Joe had a piece recently about how Half Moon Lake seems to be coming along quite well. They did another weed aquathol treatment, and he mentioned that that they need to fish down the largemouth in Half Moon Lake. Have you heard that?
Buzz
Joe?
Said that. Oh, well, he's not a fish manager. But...
he said that they exploded with the. I'm not sure if it was
because
of the plants.
They're saying that the largemouth are doing well all over the state. And I wasn't sure. I know it does get fished pretty heavily. And what I found is kind of a bottleneck right along the a lot of 13 inches, because the legal size limit is 14 inches.
sure.
So I think some people aren't afraid to take them home. But certainly it's a good little bass lake and right in the middle of town,
Yeah, oh, it is. It's a dandy. Good to wade. There's a motor restriction on it, isn't there, Joe?
Yeah.
So you
got
to paddle or electric only.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The bass, are urged to be, people, anglers are being urged to harvest bass on a lot of lakes around the north just because they're largemouth, that is, not smallmouth, not largemouth, serious competitors for walleyes.
Mm-hmm.
And so you'll see those restrictions posted. Any of the restrictions that apply to a lake in this day and age are posted at the boat landings. And if they're not, for some reason or other, just haul out your regulations book and try and solve the puzzle there, or ask somebody at a sport shop, in the area, someone who ought to be in the know, or the DNR, about what are any special regulations for an individual or group of lakes that might not be posted.
Mm-hmm. Right. And we had the program not too long ago about the Conservation Congress, and there was a lot of talk about the regulations and trying to make it simplified, one single year-round fishing season. But like I mentioned before, all half the fun is getting ramped up for opening day and reading through that manual. I always enjoyed it. Turkeys?
They voted down, didn't they?
Yeah, they did.
And what about the turnout? Was the turnout lower because of the Act 21?
I think it was.
Yeah?
There were only 60 people, roughly, Joe, at this one. You were there, and...
Yeah, I'm not sure if it was because of that, though, or just because there wasn't any mourning dove questions, or there weren't any deer questions that really bring the people out, or... Yeah.
And for those who are listening...
It was below average, though, attendance.
Yeah.
For those listening, Act 21 is the law that gives the governors or the Department of Administration the final say on any rule... rule that is designed by any state agency. So a lot of people thought that Conservation Congress would be kind of a moot point at that because of that. But it didn't seem to. I mean, there were still plenty of people that attended.
Yeah, for sure. I think I heard you say that word turkey. Turkey season has been going pretty good. I had my season last week, and I missed one, and I didn't really get out much as much as I'd like to. I'm going to try it later in May toward the fifth and sixth season again. Mm-hmm. But I know it seems to me, a lot of people are talking about getting birds. They're getting heavyweight birds. And that's, I think, a reflection of the mild winter. The turkeys were able to feed just about everywhere they
sure.
went this winter. Mm-hmm. And young birds weighing in the 22, 23, 24 pound range.
Mm-hmm. One thing that I hear at the studios in Eau Claire, just off of Claremont Avenue, our back windows, my office window points right out to a little wooded area. And last year we had turkeys all the time during the winter and the summer, or spring and summer. They would come and feed off of our apple trees here. We've got some crab apples. I haven't seen them at all this year. I didn't know if that's, I don't know a whole lot about turkeys, but I didn't mm-hmm. see them, and I thought maybe it would be a rough year for them.
Sometimes I think I don't either.
maybe when your crab apples are ripe,
they tend to. Yeah, it's so funny to see these are little trees, but it's. I'm from Superior. Well, in Superior, we don't see turkeys a lot, but seeing a 20-pound bird in a little tiny tree pecking
sure.
it.
Well, they move around. You know, they can range quite far, actually, for a turkey, for any animal.
Mm-hmm.
They're wonderful critters, though.
They are.
Get ready for the fishing season, right?
Get ready for the fishing season. Check out the, if you can, make it to Black River Falls tonight for the Deer Trustee meeting, and Spooner on Monday evening for the CWD meeting. I'm Rich Kramer. Thanks for listening. Big thanks to all the guests, including the outdoor guys, Joe Knight, Eau Claire Leader Telegram, and Dave Carlson of Northland Adventures. Thanks to Dr. Kroll for being with us for as long as he could, and Kurt Thiede. We'll talk to you next week. I'm Rich Kramer.